Blog Talk Radio.
Rational conversation about things with Sonic. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Or for new people to the program, welcome at all. This is a place where we try to air the ideas that are sometimes difficult to sort out inside of a lodge function for Freemasons. That simply means for people who aren't Masons, that we gather, Masons gather, under some guidelines, with some guidelines that allow us to the freedom to examine at an intellectual level, to examine ideas from all sides, to debate rather than argue, to push our own sense of ignorance and challenge our own opinions, ever searching for a sense of enlightenment, which I think translates well into a sense of insight, a sense of understanding of what's going on around us. This is the 129th day of the year. We only have 43 days left until summer arrives. It's remarkable in the part of the world that I'm in. Spring is upon us. The snows have melted here, and we're in the middle of that beautiful transition in seasons. And no, I'm not going to put Vivaldi out in front today with the four seasons. No, I wouldn't do that. Although it is fitting and tempting. Anyway, I want to talk to you about whether Freemasonry today is for beginners, and we'll have that in a dialogue in the commentary today. I'll give you a chance to get into your most comfortable position. Get your hand around a glass of whatever it is that comforts you. Sit back and for the next hour and let me try to entertain you and inform you and ask you the questions that I couldn't possibly answer on my own. Here's a little to open this up today and bring our thoughts to focus. This is a little something called Stardust by Stefan Grappelli. One of my favorites is from 1934.
Thank you.
Gentle touch on the piano. That's the fiddler, jazz fiddler, who founded the Quintet de Haut Club de France with Django Reinhardt in 1934. Obviously, that recording was a little more contemporary. Just a little unvarnished influence, I hope. Things in the past were better left in the past in some instances. We can experience music like that today. And it's a blessing, isn't it? Today's Mother's Day, 8th of May in this part of the world. It's celebrated various days in many, many places in the world. And apparently there's, well, we know about Father's Day, and there's something called Siblings Day. Not exactly popular yet here in Canada, but began this day in the States in celebration of the 20th century. And some countries, Mother's Day has become synonymous with older traditions, like Mother Church, Mothering Sunday. It was first celebrated in 1908. A woman by the name of Anna Jarvis held a memorial for her mom at St. Andrew's Methodist Church in Grafton, West Virginia. And she campaigned to make Mother's Day a recognized holiday in the United States from 1905, the year her mom died. Her mother had been a peace activist. Who cared for wounded soldiers on both sides of the American Civil War. So Anna wanted to honor her mom by continuing the work she had started and to set aside a day to honor all the mothers. Usually she believed they were the person who has done more for you than anyone in the world. So 1908, the U.S. Congress rejected a proposal to make it an official holiday, joking that it would have to proclaim also Mothers-in-Law Day. However, by 1911, the United States observed the holiday, with some of them officially recognizing Mother's Day as a local holiday. So there you have it. Buying gifts and things started around. What did she do? She argued that people should appreciate and honor their mothers through handwritten letters expressing their love and gratitude instead of buying gifts and pre-made cards. She protested at a candy makers convention in Philadelphia and at a meeting of American War Mothers in 1925. And by that time, carnations had become associated with Mother's Day and the selling of carnations by the American War Mothers to raise money angered Jarvis, who was arrested for disturbing the peace. Politicizing a gentle thought. There you have it. There's a little narrative, a little commentary today and I need your input in this. We're moving forward, and as we've often talked about here on Masonic effects, Freemasonry is needed more today than ever before, I would argue, ever before in history. And yet you might wonder how we come to be so concerned about whether we're meeting the needs of men who are out there seeking information, seeking answers, and hoping that the experience of Freemasonry will provide them with some of those answers. We have much to do. And as a very, very committed Freemason once recently said to me, it appears that we're moving at a glacial speed, but we're actually making decisions and making changes quite quickly. And I tend to agree with him. There is a change, and this pushes the organization not to make changes, but to validate whether it is capable of change. Because change is happening around, and you know, if the concepts of Freemasonry become irrelevant because of the complications of engagement with the community and with people, it doesn't mean that the philosophies and ethics and principles and values will fade from the landscape. But it will mean that somehow we'll have a sense in history will judge us unkindly, that we've not been a good stewards of the craft. And that's something that we're wearing now, historically, we're wearing that. Even though we have all these very stern fellows around with very forceful, persuasive temperaments, fact is, things are happening around the order, things are happening around the earth, and we're trying to get our minds around the scope of those changes that are happening and influencing Freemasonry. All of that said, it's vital that our Grand Lodges remain those bastions to protect the constitutions of Freemason, the connections, as we face really compelling questions about regular and irregular Freemasonry. And make no mistake, whether we're caught up in the pettiness or the chauvinism of our own mindsets, that's a question that's bearing down on us today. Whom amongst us would declare that we should be immune from such things, or that this is, controversial? These are things that require considerable more thought than they've been given, because when we're put on the spot to answer these questions, my goodness, we stumble. Where we have an opportunity to demonstrate leadership by our own behavior and require a thoughtful response to a thoughtful question, we seem to acquiesce to a defensive, rather superficial posturing. We just, and it makes us all look foolish when we do that. I think we'll have to admit. If anything, that defines Freemasonry, it's the expectation of a thoughtful response. We can't possibly do that with scripts that tell us how to think and what to think and what to say. That occurs through the dialogue. My goodness, it's amazing the amount of dialogue that's going on around us. Freemasonry has really turned the corner, I think. Oh, yes, I know the trickery, the figures are what they are, but the thinking today, I think, is much broader, much deeper than ever before. Oh, my. Here's what I have to say about that. It's Freemasonry for beginners. We can't all be boys all our lives. At some point, some of us begin to understand what it means, what it requires to make and keep a commitment. Our culture has experienced change, as it always has done. This is not unique to us. But what may be unique is the amount of information we have and the unusual level of access we have to facts. For many of us, Masonry is a stabilizing process. Just like marriage and having a child. Man who remains married tends to live longer than man who is single. The event of a child psychologically stabilizes the adult personality. Oh my, what does that mean? Well, crack a book. Do a little bit of work yourself. Does this play out in the neighborhoods around us? That stabilizing process? Clearly not. Across Canada, divorce rates hover just under 50% of marriages. A thoughtful man would wonder what this tells us. For the purposes of Masonic effects, it tells us something about commitment and the exercise of options in a country with one of the most progressive constitutions on earth. All I am saying is that disengagement isn't simply a reaction to Freemasonry. If we want to understand the 80-20 rule, you know, Vilfredo Pareto, I've been talking about him more lately, I'm the Italian economist, 18th century stuff. If we want to understand that filtering process, we could say that our degree factories, the degree mills, and I bore that lovely derisive term from the 30s, are winnowing out. We engage, we perform a tremendous number of initiations to find the one out of five, the 20% that will have a strong connection. And yes, that will include the boys who feel a sense of primacy and superiority because they've had family connections that have also been Masons. It says something, but we're never really sure what it says about the man. If we want to understand the 80-20, so many initiations, disappointing level of engagement, we need to look deeply into the mirror. One school of thinking will cite the effect of social welfare entitlements. While we espouse concern for ignorance and poverty, when entitlements were put in place in the 60s, Masonry membership started to fade. This brings to mind a time when good men sought protection for their families, should he die or become infirmed, by joining benevolent societies. Sort of a social insurance before social insurance, so that their family and children, their wife and children, would not fall into despair and utter poverty. Now remember, the welfare movement became forefront because of the repulsion, the experience of witnessing utter, dire, destructive poverty in the streets of London. The intolerableness of it. Good people could not tolerate it anymore. So I don't expect everybody is a social historian. There were tremendous debates about putting in measures to allow people a sustainable level of life to deal with the children born into poverty and the destruction to the culture. And some of those meager attitudes, I'm ashamed to say, not within the order, but we all know that some of those meager attitudes still exist in the world. I've got mine, so you're hungry. The human disgrace. So one school of thought is that when that responsibility was taken by the state, that there was no longer a need to, in the minds of men, to access the benevolent nature of Freemasonry. Well, how many hundreds of years had Freemasonry been promoting the common good? Hundreds of years. And I would think we should celebrate the fact that there was a government, there are governments, and will be governments that are influenced by that notion of the common good. And as unpopular as it may be, there is an organization, warts and all, that continues to this day to place a great value on the common good. Now, I think this may be one of the difficult challenges. You and I, and I don't think any one person can say they are the epitome of Freemasonic thought. I think we are approximations. And what we look for is the struggle, the effort, the awareness, the thoughtfulness. In other words, do you consider how you sound and how you come across to the people around you? Or are you just a silly old fella in love with his temper and has little care about how he comes across? The old fool, as they say. We weren't prepared, I guess, according to this thesis, for life after the entitlements where we were successful in our endeavors. Oh, let's take some credit here. We take a lot of knocks. Let's take a little credit. We actually did something really well. And in principle, it's essential. And it has appeal for people around the world. There are whole nations that scoff at us for being fools, for exercising the welfare state, for implementing it. Many people. And it makes it easy for the nationalists to fall into place. Those people of color don't belong. They should be taking care of themselves. Oh, well, my goodness, we did take all of the impose a British style of infrastructure, school systems, common language, trade. Well, we did exploit the resources of these nations. That was a time gone by, different processes, different history. Things have changed, and we've changed. We've been successful. I think we should do a growth thought of that a little bit. I know you're going to say that that's wrong and a bit sinful. Perhaps it is. It's hubris, isn't it? This brings to mind a time when good men needed to protect their families, and we were there. If we subscribe to this, we are saying the appeal of the order has been factually different than what we thought. Different than what we thought. We should be a benevolent order rather than what? An atmosphere of intellectual work, the task of thinking, the task of brooding over ideas to begin to understand, of being able to tolerate the mocking that goes with that. At every corner, that man has been mocked. I think readily of Charles Darwin. He held on to his finished paper. What would we say? Even the most simple-minded person might think that Charles Darwin was one of the greatest scientists, made the most significant contribution to mankind. And then there are others that will dismiss him. People that want to walk the surface of the earth with the dinosaurs. We have a right to our own opinion, but certainly not a right to our own facts. But even Darwin held on to his work for 7 years that we know of before he published, out of concern for the reaction of his colleagues. He knew he would be marginalized and ridiculed, and he was. And he alone, it wasn't you and I that had to bear that. It was him and his family and his children and members within his family saying, you know, think about what's going to happen here, Charles. Think about how your children are going to have to live with your discoveries. Not anybody was arguing with his findings. Now, does it take courage to step forward when everybody else is mocking you? When they look at their watch as soon as a bit of education is brought up within the lodge, when there's a lot of rudeness, you know, the chatter, the people that cannot focus for a moment or have the good grace to listen. Does that take courage to continue on? I think so. I think it does. And I have to ask myself why. Why have we allowed that to become so difficult? Oh, I'm suggesting that we were and are more than a benevolent society. Far more. And in fact, that we started off as a contemplative group where there could be thoughtful discussion. But about what? Within 2 decades of that being the case, people were wanting something a little more entertaining, a little more socially rewarding. That deep conversation was then relegated to the alchemist labs and the libraries, the den of a few very thoughtful men. So have we ever escaped that kind of concern? I'd say no. I think the order has always had greater appeal than any one aspect. That's why I refer to it as a process, more like a lifestyle than pomp and circumstance. And here I think we're far too modest about that. The effect that we want could be so much greater. If we subscribe to this, we see the apologist surface, and I think that's very unfortunate. Apologist surface is if the craft in some way must shy away from reality. That fits with the no controversy rule. But really, it isn't a membership, a faceless membership that faces the metaphoric body blow. It's the idea of Freemasonry. Is it asking too much to control our emotion and think about the consequence of the need for a narrative? To thoughtfully approach this, to talk amongst ourselves, and to begin to understand the critical value of a narrative. So if I ask you, what is the narrative of Freemasonry today? Oh, dear. I can't even say that it's on the minds of most Masons. And I'm not the person to point a finger. I'm certainly not going to do that. That's ridiculous. I'm saying there is a need. And there will be, and there is, a core, a small group of Freemasons that are beginning that narrative. It's always, if you listen very closely, that murmur has always been in the background. Personally, I'm not a fan of the stern Mason, because those are people that are unhappy people. Angry Masons are unhappy Masons. I don't think they add much to the conversation, except they like to think that being angry is a way of promoting a very feeble idea or persuasion. Ridiculous. But I ask you for your input in this. I think there are some appendant groups that have strengthened, not only strengthened, but endorsed a narrative that will take them forward based on little more tangible evidence than the sense that the discussion, the options, need to be more available to more men. I pull back to this. If I'm wandering around the provinces of Canada and I'm looking for a place of solace, a place of history, a place where meaning and philosophy can be discussed, a place where I understand what that is, and I knock at the lodge door, my sense is that too many of those fellows are leaving before they've been engaged themselves. I think it's a harsh, but I think they've been put off. They've been disappointed. And I've just been doing some experiments myself with this. I think it would be fair to say that I have a background of commitment to the order. Not ambition. I think ambition is callous. Always have. But when you're committed to something, the ambitious amongst us really step forward because they are that competitive. Huh. So I don't think, but when you actually pull back a little bit into the, I'm trying to achieve the mindset of somebody that's disengaged. What I've discovered has been really odd. The craft generally has priorities, and the experience for the uncommitted is that it's the needs of the organization, not the needs of the individual, that are primary. So when these very bright and thoughtful Masons have begun to ask, what is the quality? What is the quality of the experience? Is somebody getting the quality of experience that they deserve? Well, we know that question is generated from a notion that right now they are not. That 80% who walk in the front door and out the back door. So will the trends around us stop while we catch our breath? No. That's why I suggest that in the future, our leadership will need different types of leaders than we did in the past. Well, no smarts to say that. We'll always need leaders that have a focus on the horizon. But will we need the people that also will play to the populist notion of Freemasonry? Mm-hmm. Every so often we need maybe 1 in 5 or 1 in 10 leadership, maybe 1 in 10% of the leaders that will influence that discussion and that thinking. Every time we do, it's not going to be a big ripple effect, because our members, just through attrition, are dropping off. But there is that opportunity for renewal. Here's a little Wes Montgomery with Around Midnight. Check it out. Montgomery. Just incredible. Just incredible. Can't help it. Part of our history is about the music. Good Masons. Now, before we just drift off into this soup of neuroses, before we can do no more than see the world through our own orifices, oh dear. Let's face it, our history is full of significant attacks that would make us, if we can't handle what's going on around us, we should be ashamed. We can't handle, I'm going to have a little bit of a dust up, but we've never done it before. If we can't think beyond, we've never done it that way before. Oh my, we should be historically erased from the pages. Here's an example. I hope Freemasons understand just how strong we are. Some pious old conservative boy comes out of the, dusts himself off, and comes out and starts ranting about his position. And what? The rest of us are supposed to quake like choir boys? Where in the world did we ever get into that? No, we shouldn't be giving as good as we get. We're better than that. We rise above it and handle it with some dignity. Let the old boy rant, put a blanket over him. He'll be gone soon. His ideas certainly are. And we have to look for the old, ancient creaks when he walks that may not be able to articulate, but has the heart of a Mason. Here's the attack that he stood for. I'm going to hear a little bit about this. Is Masons under attack? I think this should make us all stand up a little stronger, a little prouder, and make us think twice about what in the world we've let ourselves sink to. Good grief. Westminster on the 1st of November, 1388. This is according to the calendar of close rolls. A writ was issued by King Richard II. Yes, the one that was just dug up in Leicester under the parking lot. Yes, that one. And sent to all the sheriffs throughout the land. And it goes like this. To the Sheriff of Lincoln, order for particular causes declared in the Parliament last holden in Canterbury then, to cause proclamation to be made that all masters and wardens of guilds and fraternities shall before the purification next certify in Chancery, the manner, form, and authority for the foundation of such guilds, and continuance and rulings thereof, the oaths of the brethren and sisters, their meetings, the liberties, privileges, statutes, customs, and therefore their lands, rents, and mortified and not mortified, their goods and chattels, the value of their lands, the price of their goods, and all circumstances related to the same, under pain of forfeiture of their lands and goods, bringing before the king and council any charters and letters patent of the king or any of his forefathers concerning the same under pain of revocation thereof and annulment of the liberties, privileges, and grants therein contained. And ordered to certify before the octaves of St. Hilary the next days and places where proclamation was made and the names of those who made it. The king, it appears, needed money, hard-pressed as ever, to fund his military activities. We may note that not only were the guilds included, but the ministries and crafts as well. That would include the London livery companies. Interestingly, the date of the order is very close indeed to the approximate dating of the Regia's poem, circa 1390, which seems to be based in part on a prior document indicating the privileges, statutes, and customs of the craft. The perhaps high-handed nature of Masons' privileges outlined in the old charges that Masonry's special status had been anciently ratified by saints, sages, and ancient kings might suggest an irritation with royal demands for specifying their exact legal status. The Regia's manuscript may represent a metrical version of a serious response to Richard's order. One may wonder how Henry Yeovil felt when working on the King Richard's tomb, King Richard's II. He died in 1399. Did he wonder whether masonry always had the last word? Less than 40 years after King Richard's writ, Masons were in more serious trouble. We know this from an act headed the Statutes made at Westminster, 1424. Three, Henrique the Sixth, MO3. Masons shall not confederate themselves in chapters and assemblies. Starting to feel your spine growing or withering, Oh, let's debate whether we have to stand up to some pious old blah, blah, blah. Here. First, whereas by the yearly congregations and confederacies made by the Masons in the general chapters and assemblies, the good course and effect of the statutes of laborers be openly violated and broken in subversion of the law and to the great damage of all the commons, our said Lord the King, willing in his case to provide remedy by the advice and assent of Parliament aforesaid, and at the special request of said commons, hath ordained and established that such chapters and congregations shall not be hereafter holden. Bad Masons. And if any such be made, they that cause such chapters and congregations to be assembled and holden, if they thereof be convicts, shall be judged for felons. You're talking about our Constitution. Well, this is really before the Constitution, yeah. And that all the other Masons that come to such chapters and congregations be punished by imprisonment of their bodies and make fine a ransom at the King's will. You're starting to get the Masonic perspective yet? A document such as the Cook manuscript, we've heard about this, 1420, of Masonic charges, my favorite, which we shall discuss in the next show, may have not only a response to attack, but a confidence-building exercise for Masons. The statute may explain a certain reticence thenceforth to reveal meetings of Masons to the public. Yet think? Clearly, if they were to meet with the knowledge of the commons, there might be problems. So did we stop? Oh, well, don't do it. The king says so, and, you know, they're going to put our Grand Master in a prison, treat him as a felon, and then they're going to arrest all the rest of us and fine us and forfeit our belongings. I see a bunch of you not withering. No, not one of you. But putting your heads together and saying, what in the hell? This act is mentioned in William Preston's Illustrations of Freemasonry. It was written in 1772. Preston says that it was never put into execution, but does not tell us why. But Preston also says that later the king was initiated with ministers and nobles following his example. There is no evidence of this. In fact, Henry VI was only 3 when the act was passed. Henry V's brother, Gloucester, was regent of England, and the act appears to have been a commons initiative. Good to know. So that means, you know, the gentry were the people that were making this up. This act of Henry VI was well known to Elias Ashmole's colleague, Dr. Robert Plott. Plott makes a special reference to it in Chapter 8 of his Natural History of Staffordshire. That was written in 1686. And he describes the lodges of Freemasons operating in the Staffordshire Moorlands and over the rest of the country, who accept gentlemen as part of their fraternity, give advice on building materials, of secret passwords, and mutually support one another in times of need. Plott is in no doubt that he is talking about the same society which came under pressure for setting independent wage schemes in the 15th century. Plott further states that Henry VI's Act against the Masons was repealed in 1563 by order of Elizabeth I. and one would like to know more about the background of this intriguing detail. Plot, furthermore, refers to what he regards as the Freemasons' spurious history of legendary history of Freemasonry, whose elements tally well with what we know of the late medieval old charges. Plot is even keen to add that the practices of the Society of Freemasons with regard to their independent wage setting warrant scrutiny in his own time. Of course, Plot could have been wrong about this, but there is no persuasive reason to think so. There are parallels with our own time. First, external opposition necessitates writing down, perhaps unwillingly or defensively, some of the mysterious nature and origin of the craft. The danger of ossification once this has been done is obvious. You write it down, it's like we get stuck. Can you imagine trying to write down what's in your brain, what's in your mind today, as if that's moving forward, all that you can think or you will think or comment on a particular topic? Ugh. Second, Masonry is attacked because it's different, somehow apart from mainstream society. That's you, my brother. You trying to fit in? Really, really, how's that going for you? Trying to blend into the crowd? Yeah. Stay away from the alchemists. Stay away from those people that are challenging ideas. Or are you true to what people are saying about us? We're different. Roll up your sleeves. Stop whining. Seems quite possible that the old tradition of Freemasons meeting in secret goes back to the time when free assembly was officially forbidden by statute. So you forbid it, we did it. You threaten us, we continue to do it. You menace us, we continue to meet behind closed doors in secret. Today, we blab like alewives. What secrets? Everybody's chattering away. You think the 80% that are walking in and out and not going any further, we're not giving them any of it, much of the secret. They go through the initiation. I find it incredibly disappointing that that experience isn't an uplifting event for men, as it has been for you and many of you. Me? Oh, my goodness, yes. It seems quite possible that the old tradition of Freemasons meeting in secret goes back to the time when free assembly was officially forbidden. Security-conscious government is always wary of free assembly. You heard that today? Yeah? Okay. That's the state. Those who automatically condemned all private assemblies ought to remember that the dissident resistance to communist oppression in the Eastern Bloc not so long ago was prefaced and acted in secrecy. These groups were praised by freedom-loving Western states. One should not take this analogy too far. It is a certainty that Freemasons in Britain and America have never threatened the legitimate government of the day. Freemasons do not have a unified political or religious outlook. That is one of the pristine beauties of the modern and ancient fraternity. Makes you feel, take a deep breath, and makes you give your head a shake and think, really, compared to what we are anguishing and wringing our hands over today, this is what we've become, that timid. A rule against controversy? Oh, my goodness. Talk. Some talk louder. Some make no sense. But where did we start to shy away from the discussion? I think it's always been the case that if you ask any good Mason, he will want to hear your opinion. And he will take the time to listen. Look for those true Masons amongst us. They are there. That's where the narrative is. And the rest require leadership and guidance and the influence of your behavior. I'm going to send you off to another week. I hope you celebrate Mother's Day and in according to the intent. If the reality doesn't live up to the expectations, then focus on the wonder of life around us. Here's a little Tony Bennett and Amy Winehouse to send you off. Remember, great architect of the universe, the architect is a concept that came where? From where? The Hindi? Oh my. Talk to you soon. Thank you for tuning in. It's been absolutely great.
My heart is sad and lonely. For you I sigh, for you, dear, only. Why haven't you seen it? I'm all for you, body and soul.
I spent my days at a hunger, and wondering why.
Responsibility.
Take it all, nothing to make but to walk away. I have no regrets. He walked away. Even if I'm someone of you, and perspective pushes through, I'll be some next man's other woman, so I can't break myself again. Should just be my own best friend. I fuck myself in the head with Superman. He walked away. The sun goes down. No more, no care. My death is goodbye.